Federal budget cuts, military reductions, and growing international interest in the Arctic could mean the U.S. will be clamoring in the future to keep the public and the fragile ecosystem safe in Alaska's northern region. Senator Dan Sullivan has been pushing for comprehensive Arctic policy and working to stop military cuts. Craig Fleener is Governor Walker's Arctic policy advisor. Both are our guests as we discuss the U.S. Senate and the prospects for the future of the Arctic today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
If you're a rural Alaska resident with an interest in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations, and maintaining an open forum for public expressions, opinions, and concerns regarding subsistence, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, January 29, 2016. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, and welcome to Talk of Alaska. What is the right number for military members in Alaska to ensure both safety in the state and be ready for deployments around the world? What should a comprehensive Arctic strategy encompass for the future of the people who have lived there for thousands of years and the people who will be visiting and working there in future decades? Today on Talk of Alaska, we'll examine those topics and others with our guests, Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan and Arctic Policy Advisor for Governor Bill Walker, Craig Fleener. Welcome to both of you.
Great to see you, Lori. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Thank you for being here. Senator Sullivan, let's start with you. I want to discuss your first year in the Senate, but first let's briefly talk about the news of the day.
Yeah.
President Obama is taking executive action on some gun control measures in an effort to expand background checks for buyers. The president wants tighter rules on people that are in the business of selling guns. Essentially, people who sell at gun shows is one of the areas that he's most concerned about. Let's talk about that first, and then we'll talk about some of the other aspects of this. What are your initial thoughts? Well, I know that there's not a lot of details yet. But
yeah, I have not yet seen the details. I certainly, though, am going to look at this with a fine-tooth comb. And, as Alaska's junior senator, I'm going to be someone who's very, very focused on protecting our Second Amendment rights. And this is something that I think cuts across all different elements of Alaska, parties, where the people live. I mean, everybody is very focused on this issue of protecting our Second Amendment rights. And what makes me nervous, Lori, without having, again, seen the details, is, you know, this is kind of part of what President Obama has been doing in a number of areas where he can't get things through the Congress. And, you know, this administration has tried to move forward with additional gun control measures that have not gotten through the Congress. Then he takes executive action that is of a very dubious legal nature. And it's not just me saying that or other members of Congress, whether it's immigration, whether it's the, you know, expansion of the EPA's powers through executive orders. These have all been ruled by courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, as having exceeded the president's executive authority. So if he's doing that on the Second Amendment, that's not just the law, that's the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, you're going to see a significant pushback by members of Congress like myself. But I'm still going to, I'll look at the details. I don't have the details yet.
Mm-hmm. Not only does he want to tighten up controls of people selling guns at gun shows and make them go through more of a formalized process to be registered as gun sellers so that then there's a more comprehensive tracking method for the people who are buying guns from them. But it sounds like there will also be an expansion and bolstering the background check system by providing more funding for FBI staff, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, ATF, and funding for mental health treatment.
Yeah.
Do some of these things sound like they could be reasonable?
Well, look, I think a lot of people agree with the issue of looking at the issue of mental health with regard to violence in America. So, and what's important about those elements of what he announced today is that these are from my understanding, appropriations that he will seek through the Congress. Therefore, these kind of initiatives would go through the Congress. And whether they're going to have the support of the American people through their representatives in Congress, that's how we need to move forward on these kind of matters, not through unilateral executive actions where the president says, hey, I can't get this done in the Congress, therefore I'm just going to act on my own. That's not how the Constitution sets up our form of government. Certainly, it's not how it sets it up with regard to rights enshrined by the Bill of Rights.
Does it seem like something like this will end up being challenged legally for such a long period of time that they won't be able to be enacted before he leaves office?
Again, anyway, it depends on what's in it. But as I mentioned earlier, you know, the president 22 different times said that he didn't have the authority to act on immigration issues. Then he acted, essentially contrary to what he had said 22 different times. This was challenged by a number of states. And right now, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals has put a stay on any of his orders with regard to executive actions on immigration because they believe he doesn't have the authority to do it. Same with the waters of the United States, a new EPA regulation that would dramatically expand the jurisdiction of the EPA in Alaska and other states. Over 30 states, including the state of Alaska, have sued to stop that. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals said likely to be a victory by the states, so they put a stay on that. So again, there's a pattern here, and the pattern is the president needs to work more with the members of Congress, and I'm talking about Democrats and Republicans, because on all these issues, there's been bipartisan opposition. And so we'll see on this. Again, I don't want to talk too much on the details until I see the details, but there's some skepticism here when the president says, I'm acting unilaterally again with regard to executive authority that I think is probably legally dubious.
All right. Well, we'll wait to find out more details about that and maybe check back in with you about your thoughts once you've had a chance to look at that.
Look forward to doing that.
But let's talk a little bit about your first year. There's been a lot of drama in Congress during your first year on the job. Tell us about what your initial impressions were when you started work as a U.S. senator and how you're seeing it today.
Well, look, I'm first of all, I just want to say how honored I am to represent the people of Alaska. What an honor it is to serve in the United States Senate. And one of the things that we tried to do with a new majority in the Senate was get back to what's referred to as regular order in the Senate. What that means is essentially bringing up bills through committee, letting them come to the floor, letting Democrats and Republicans bring amendments to improve these kind of bills. And that's what we've done. So compared to last year, you know, last year when Harry Reid was in charge of the Senate in 2014, there was 14 roll call amendment votes in the U.S. Senate in the entire year. 14. One a month. Essentially, the greatest deliberative body was shut down. This year, we're close to already in the first year, close to over 200. In that, and what I don't think you've seen in terms of news is that what that has done is actually created a lot of momentum for bipartisan achievements, whether it's very significant education reform, whether it's significant reforms on issues such as human trafficking that passed the Congress, that's a big issue in Alaska. The transportation bill, a new infrastructure bill, I'd love to get into details here. First major highway infrastructure bill in over 10 years.
The DRIVE Act.
Yes. Which is going to send over $2.2 billion to Alaska. These are all things that happened with regard to a bipartisan approach that went through the regular order process that enabled senators to try to improve the bill with amendments. And I think that's what the American people want us to do. Of course, we're not always in agreement on issues, but there's been more accomplishments than I think most people recognize, because I think sometimes, to be honest, the media likes to kind of tout where the disputes are versus where some of the bipartisan consensus is.
All right. If you would like to join our conversation, you're going to have to use a different phone line today because we have some challenges with our regular line. So if you would like to call and ask some questions of either U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan or Arctic Policy Advisor for Governor Bill Walker, Craig Fleener, please use the number statewide of 888 888-353-5752. That's 888-353-5752. I'm hoping that these are also on the website so people can check there. And locally, 550-8433. 550-8433 is the number to join today. We're using different numbers. And you can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So let's get into some of the work that you're doing. You have been working on trying to stop military reductions. What's the latest on that effort?
Well, Lori, I think we've made significant progress on that. What we did in another one of the bills that I mentioned, or I failed to mention, that got significant bipartisan support was the Defense Authorization Act. And one of the provisions in there was a provision that I put forward, which was to have what's called an Arctic operations plan. And my friend Craig is very familiar with that in terms of what the military, what an O plan, they call in the military, means with regard to military strategy. It is a very significant undertaking that we think will help focus the attention literally of the federal government on how important the Arctic is in terms of our national interest here, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's transportation routes, whether it's the environment, whether it's resources. And to be honest, even according to the Secretary of Defense, the United States has been slow to recognizing how important the Arctic is in terms of our nation's national interests. So we help spur that. This amendment or this provision in the Defense Authorization Act lays out, hey, this is a very important region. The federal government, the Secretary of Defense, needs to look at all the key strategic interests of the Arctic and then needs to put together an operations plan. That is a very serious undertaking with regard to the military, with regard to our force posture, with regard to our interest up here. We can talk about it, but the Russians have certainly focused a lot in the last 2 years on the Arctic, dramatically building up their force posture in the region. And now what we're saying is, before we move any troops out of the Arctic, essentially out of Alaska, what the Secretary of Defense needs to do is put forward a strategy, recognize what the interests are, and then make his decision on the posture of our forces in Alaska based on this strategy. So I have gotten a commitment all the way at the highest levels of the Army, the Chief of Staff of the Army, the new Undersecretary of the Army, in hearings, in private meetings, that says we should not be moving any troops out of Alaska until they've undertaken this requirement of an Arctic operations plan. So right now we are preserving the 425. That's the Airborne Brigade Combat Team based here in J-Bear. And the good news is, and this is a shout out to what the administration has been doing in other areas of the Arctic, for example, becoming literally the combat hub of air power for the Asia Pacific, Alaska is now recognized as critical to the national interests of the country. And that's similar with regard to missile defense. You'll see a significant increase in the president's budget and DOD spending this year with regard to missile defense, a lot of which will occur here in Alaska, because a lot of people don't know this, but with regard to missile defense for the country, literally for the nation, whether you're protecting LA or New York City, the cornerstone of America's missile defense is right here in Alaska. So there's a lot of positive things going on, and what we've been trying to do is focus the attention of the highest federal officials, President, Secretary of Defense, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, on how critical the Arctic is, how critical Alaska is with regard to the Arctic, and how critical our forces are here, not just because they're important to Alaska, because they're important to the national interests of the United States.
Is there a timeline for this operational plan, Department of Defense O plan, and will that be a public document?
Great question. There's no specific timeline by which they have to do it. These can take a long time. These are not small documents. We have operations plans for major contingencies around the world, whether it's, you know, in Korea or Taiwan or Iran. We have O-plans that are on the shelf that are updated on a regular basis. A lot of times they're classified because of what they focus on in terms of warfighting capability, but they also focus on much broader issues such as infrastructure, key transportation routes, strategic interests. So it's going to take some time. And part of the reason is, and I was critical this past year during hearings, the Secretary of Defense, the Obama administration, the Department of Defense did have an Arctic plan. And I'm sure Craig had seen it. It was 13 pages long. Six of the 13 pages were pictures. It was not, by any means, a serious plan. This requirement says, hey, this is a very important, critical region for the United States, for our national interests, and it merits a critical military operations plan. So it's going to take some time, but I certainly would think that members of the Alaska military, such as Lieutenant General Handy, who's the top three-star commander in Alaska, will have an important role in crafting this important document.
Well, let's get you in here now, Mr. Fleener. You're the governor's Arctic policy advisor. You've worked on Arctic issues. You're an Arctic citizen. So what do you think about, first of all, the 13-page report that came out from the Obama administration and the needs going forward?
Well, thanks a lot. I think that we've had a number of plans, if you want to call them that, all the way back to Bush, talking about the importance of the Arctic, and we've done very little to implement any of that. And as a matter of fact, our force structure in Alaska has been degrading little by little over time, but the needs of the world have been increasing. And if you think about where Alaska is, I don't know if you know Billy Mitchell. There's a guy named Billy Mitchell. He's the father of the United States Air Force. He said that Alaska is the most strategically important place in the world. And if you think about where we're located, Alaska is located, I think it's 9.5 hours from 90% of the industrialized world. Yet we don't really have the forces necessary to realize the importance of this strategically important location. And if you also consider the Pacific Theater, in terms, in military terms, we have four of the world's greatest powers that are not necessarily our friends. We've got Russia, we've got North Korea, India, and China. And we have very little in terms of the ability to defend ourselves or even to force project to make sure that people know that we can take care of ourselves. And so it was critically important that we stepped it up in terms of developing a better national strategy for the Arctic. It was really a dream come true for me and many others that the good senator put forward the request or the authorization for an O-plan. And just so folks understand it, without an O-plan, you get no money. Without an O-plan, you have no mission. And without an O-plan, you get no people or other resources. So an O-plan, an operations plan, really is the foundation. It is the absolute bare bones basis, the first thing you need in order to build a force for whatever the operation is, whether it's offensive or defensive or both. And we've been without that. And we cannot really function in terms of national defense for this part of the world without a good O-plan in place. And as the Arctic continues to expand, as it continues to become more popular, as we get more warships from other countries traveling by or more commercial activity taking place, we have to be able to respond. And it isn't as if we're looking to pick a fight with somebody. Really what it is us wanting to be a good neighbor, us putting our white picket fence up saying, this is our stuff and leave us alone. Or even better than that is to be able to provide other assets to help out in times of emergency. We don't have that capability at all in the Arctic. We're severely lacking.
Well, and also there was at one point in time a pretty good agreement between the United States and Russia as far as practicing for search and rescue and cooperation. But where is that at today, Senator?
Well, I think it's still important. And the Arctic Council has, which doesn't focus at all, and I think appropriately, on military issues, does have a focus on cooperation. And I think we need to continue to look at that, including with the Russians. But you know, Lori, as Craig mentioned, Alaska is not only the gateway to the Arctic, it's the gateway to the Asia Pacific. And we are so strategically important to the country. You know, he mentions that Billy Mitchell quote, when Secretary Carter, the Secretary of Defense, was up for his confirmation hearing early last year, I actually asked him the question in his confirmation hearing. I laid out the quote, but I didn't mention the name of the place. I said, Billy Mitchell, the father of the American Air Force, described this place as the most strategic place in the world. Whoever owns this place will own North America, Europe, Asia. And then I asked the secretary, who was up for confirmation, do you know which place Billy Mitchell was talking about? And he correctly stated Alaska, which was good news that our Secretary of Defense was, at least a little bit. He probably had a sense of where it was, given that I was asking the question. But, with regard to cooperation, we need to do that. But we also need to be realistic. In the last 2 years, the Russian military has increased its force posture by 4 brigade combat teams in the Arctic. I'm just talking the Arctic. A brand new Arctic command. This past year, they have stood up 13 new airfields in the Arctic. They have 40 icebreakers with a desire to build at least 13 more. Some of those are nuclear powered. We have 2 and 1 is broken. Mm-hmm. And so in every, they just put up a brand new, super sophisticated air defense system throughout the Arctic just a couple weeks ago. Every day, there is a new story about the Russian militarization of the Arctic, and we're looking to cut the only airborne brigade combat team in the entire Asia-Pacific, in the entire Arctic. That's specifically Arctic-trained. And, yeah. As Craig knows, and as the members of the military here know, you can't just take troops from Camp Pendleton, California, or Fort Benning, Georgia, and say, now go operate in 20 below. You have to train those members of the military for months. So it just doesn't make strategic sense, given what the Russians are doing right now, for us to be cutting our forces in this critical part of the world.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are talking today about the Arctic. We're talking today about the military reductions that possibly could be coming for Alaska. And my guests are U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan and also Governor Walker's Arctic policy advisor, Craig Fleener. I wouldn't normally do this, but I'm going to take a couple of calls on the Second Amendment executive action because it is kind of the news of the day. Although I do want us to focus a lot on the Arctic, we'll take this call from Penny in Soldotna. Hi, Penny.
Hello. Thank you very much. My name is Penny Vadla, and thank you, Senator Sullivan, and thank you, Craig Fleener. I really appreciate you taking the time. Senator Sullivan, I was concerned about your comments, and I agree that we should honor our Second Amendment rights, but I also think with the turn of what's happening in the world, and especially our country, we should look at making sure that we do have secure background checks and that people can't just go out and buy guns whenever they want to. And the reason I believe that we can't get things through Congress is of the partisan politics that takes place in Congress. And so when you have partisan politics and people aren't willing to cross the lines and do the best thing for the individuals who represent our amazing country, then I think somebody has to take executive action when members of Congress don't work together. And so that's a very big concern of mine. And in addition to that, I think that I applaud the Affordable Care Act because my kids have care, and they didn't before. And we have to make sure that we take care of the young people and the old people and the people who don't have $100,000 or $200,000 or even $30,000 worth of income. So I don't call it the Obama Act. I call it Obama Cares. And that's what I call the Affordable Care Act. And regarding climate change, I came up here 40 years ago to teach school for 1 year, and I love it. And I stay here because I love it. And I see the climate change and what's happening. And the fact that people say this is not climate change is appalling to me. I realize that things are cyclical. But I also realize that we need to take action so that my kids and my kids' kids and your kids have something that they can be live in and be proud of. And so, Mr. Fleener, I applaud what you are doing, and I applaud Governor Walker and his efforts to make the right steps and changes. And I applaud you, Dan Sullivan, for your efforts too. But I do hope that people will begin to work together.
All right,
for
thank
one another.
You.
Thank you.
Thanks, Penny. You've covered a lot of things. I'd like to just focus a little bit in on the Second Amendment issue. What can be done to prevent mass shootings in the country? She raised some issues of being concerned about how do we push back against these things.
Well, Penny, thanks for your comments, and I appreciate you calling in. And look, I think that anytime there is a mass shooting, or, you know, Lori, one of the issues that doesn't come up a lot, I mean, just look what goes on in some of our major cities every weekend. It's not just mass shootings. It's, I mean, look at Chicago. My goodness, there's there's murders, you know, in terms of individual murders that happen all around the country. The fact is, though, in some places like Chicago and other places that actually have the strictest gun control laws, you often have the highest murder rates. And so one of my biggest concerns, and Penny mentioned that it's partisan politics on gun control, but there have been measures that have been bipartisan that have not gotten through the Congress, not along party lines, but along bipartisan lines. So I think what you need to do is focus on some of the broader issues. Enforcing the gun laws that we currently have, I think, as we talked about at the top of the program, the mental health issues are certainly something that
way
we need to look at.
What about the issue, Senator, excuse me for interrupting, but we had an email question, too, about automatic rifles or semi-automatic rifles, assault-style weapons. A lot of people who are gun owners, I'm one of them. I own rifles. I've hunted all my life. But I also question why do people need assault-style weapons to hunt? And this is an email question from a listener wondering that same thing. What is the reason to allow those? Is the fear that once you start down that path, then there will be just increasing restrictions? Or why do you think that there's
a
push against that?
I think there's that fear. But there's also the sense that, I mean, even if you look at San Bernardino and the strict laws that California has, that has not prevented some of these, horrible mass shootings that we've had. But there is the broader issue of we have a Second Amendment, and it's very, very important to most Alaskans. I would say almost all Alaskans. So we need to look at ways in which we can certainly move forward to lower violence. I mean, one issue that doesn't come up at all in this debate anymore, which is what we're seeing with our kids watching TV, watching video games. My goodness, you turn on the so-called ABC Family Channel. That's what it's called, the ABC Family Channel. There is mayhem and murder on TV in the video games in ways that I think desensitize some of our youth. And so to me, it there's always this focus, and the president's doing right now, solely on gun control. It is such a broader topic with regard to reducing violence that we need to focus on. And again, I'm going to be a very strong supporter of our Second Amendment rights because I believe in it. It's a critical part of the Bill of Rights, and the vast majority of Alaskans, I think, feel the way I do on this issue.
All right. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to move on to discussions about the climate and the Arctic as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
And by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com.
The UAS School of Management offers Bachelor of Business Administration degree programs online with an emphasis in human resources and management information systems. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Mr. Fleener, you had a comment that we couldn't quite get in about actually the Second Amendment and assault rifles, and go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that I think that it is important to be able to own a rifle that can shoot multiple rounds. I'm actually a wildlife biologist by training and used to spend quite a bit of time out in the field in the springtime, and have had dozens and dozens of bears chase me while doing my field work. And it's actually a nice thing to be able to have access to more than three rounds in a standard rifle or four rounds in a standard rifle when you have a sow and two-year-old cubs chasing you. Now, I haven't always had to dispatch bears. You try not to if you can avoid it, but sometimes you can't avoid it. And it's a useful thing. It doesn't mean that the reason I have it is so I can become a bad guy, but it is an important component of the Second Amendment, I think, is self-preservation and being able to take care of yourself. And there are a lot of good people out there who want to be able to take care of themselves.
All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got a lot of calls stacked up here. Paul is in Juneau. Hi, Paul.
Yeah. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. I just wanted to mostly thank Senator Sullivan. I first came to Alaska a little over 40 years ago, and I've never been happier with the delegation to Congress than I am right now, and especially Senator Sullivan has worked towards more transparency in Washington, D.C., and certainly now I see Congress more bipartisan than ever before. It's the White House that doesn't seem to believe in bipartisan measures. And I'll just close, I want to say I've never heard anybody articulate the gun issue for Alaskans better than I just heard Senator Sullivan articulate it just on this program. So I just want to thank Senator Sullivan very, very much for his hard work. I'm sure it's no fun living back there compared to being up here in Alaska. And I'll sign off now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Paul, for your comments.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much for that. And you're, I've had the last 3 weeks back here with my wife and daughters, and it's been just amazing. So it's always good to get back home, refresh, get out, see all the great Alaskans that I'm honored to represent. And your point on the bipartisan work, one of the things that I certainly have tried to do and think is probably one of my most important roles, and again, it's great sitting next to Craig Fleener here, who I consider a good friend, but also somebody that I'm coordinating with on policy. One of the things I think is important as Alaska senator is to reach out to literally everyone. Republicans, Democrats, the governor, his cabinet, all our state legislators, union leaders, Native leaders. What I've tried to do this past year is to reach out to everybody. We have a policy that we don't always keep, but we certainly try hard to keep, which is if you're an Alaskan and you visit D.C. and you've bought that plane ticket and taken the time, then you should actually get to meet with your senator. So not just staff, but with your senator. So we try to do that with everybody. And again, we don't have a perfect record, but we try really, really hard to do that. And I think an important role in my job is to make sure we're coordinating closely with all the leaders in the state. And I think in the first year, we have a pretty good record of doing that. So we'll continue to do it. And certainly somebody meeting with Craig a lot and being able to sit with him in the studio today has been a great part about this morning.
Well, and I'll just add on a little bit to that. We do have a really good working relationship. I think that it's been very beneficial for Alaska, and just a few areas that we've worked a lot on, and each of these are important Arctic issues, so it's why I'm speaking about them. We've tried to find ways to work on Alaska's transportation issues. We have tremendous transportation woes in the state. We don't have the infrastructure necessary to connect our communities up. The infrastructure we do have is crumbling. We don't have good communications infrastructure, transportation, all of that. And so we're trying to work to put together a plan to address those problems. Now, they'll be very expensive, and we'll get a lot of pushback because somebody will say something about a road or a bridge to nowhere. But if you think back to the 1800s, all of the infrastructure projects in the lower 48 were bridges and roads to nowhere, but they were critically important to opening up the country and to making America what it is today. We focused on Arctic issues, including the military, including climate change, including all of these other topics I've already talked about that you can stuff under the broad Arctic agenda, including the military, which is one of the very important things for not just for Alaska, but for the nation itself and infrastructure in general. We have great needs for roads, for bridges, for communication satellites, for GPS satellites. We've got an ever-growing, ever-enlarging need because of the interest in the Arctic, and it isn't going to go away. I know that we're having a lot of troubles economically right now, but it doesn't mean that we need to take our eye off of the target that's a long ways away. We need to put a plan together, and it's one of the things that we haven't done a very good job of, whether in D.C. or in Alaska. We haven't done a very good job of planning our infrastructure or transportation needs long into the future, and those are some of just a few highlights of the things that we've been working on and talking about and looking for solutions on. So if you've got solutions, give us a call and help us out.
And if you'd like to join the program today, you can call. We're using different numbers today. We're having some trouble with our regular numbers. So if you want to join from outside Anchorage, please call 888-353-5752. That's 888-353-5752. Or locally, the number is 550-8433, 550-8433. Let's go to Kelsey in Palmer. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say thank you, Mr. Fleener and Mr. Sullivan, for your hard work you're doing for the state of Alaska. And I just had mostly comments for Mr. Sullivan, and then I'll get off there and let him respond. Basically, watching how ineffective government has become seems like it's leading to an entire generation that's disenfranchised and not voting. And mostly what I've noticed come out of Congress is our sound bites and I mean the Senate patting themselves on the back for the absolute least amount of work at the deadline, you know, kicking the can down the road 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, not having the political courage to make a decisive vote that may mean they're not reelected.
Are you talking primarily about the budget, or
I'm just talking about everything? It seems like the Senate, they just focus in on the issue that's going to get them the most political capital for their next election. You know, we've got lots of issues that are very, very important. You know, one, for example, the use of antibiotics in livestock is leading to our most potent antibiotics not working. This is a huge issue that is not even being discussed on a national level. The U.S. leads the world in incarcerations of its own citizens. There's not a lot of play going on about fixing that system. The big money in politics, or this one I have personal experience with, a family member. Recently, we needed to get some mental health care for him. We've got money. We've got access, which makes us already better off than, I'm guessing, the majority of people that need mental health care. And we can't get care. It's impossible. And the providers are maxed out. And I'm just really feeling very apathetic about our government right now. And
well, thank
I
you.
Want the Senate to get to work. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelsey, for the call. You've covered a variety of issues. Senator Sullivan, would you like to respond?
Well, Kelsey, I think we can always do better, right? And I can tell you, we've put together a team in Washington. We actually do work hard. I can assure you of that. But on the issue, on the antibiotics issue, you know, please feel free to write into the office or come to my office out in the valley or in Anchorage. I don't know a lot about that one, so that could be very useful for me. I don't think we want apathetic citizens. We want engaged citizens. On the issue of incarceration, there is a big bill that I've been looking hard at and been digging into the details of on criminal justice reform that's making its way through the Congress. And it's a very interesting bill because it has co-sponsors who are very conservative Republicans, very liberal Democrats, and yet it's getting a lot of attention. It's something, as I mentioned, I'm very interested in. So I think that's an issue that you raise that there has been a lot of work on. And then, you know, when you mention at the deadline kind of work, and Lori mentioned the budget deal, to be honest, I would agree with you on that. That was a vote that I've actually voted against in mid-December, the final vote we took before I came home, because of what you just mentioned, right? We had a bill that essentially came to the Senate. It was 2,200 pages. If you look at the tax reform elements and the spending aspects, it was $1.8 trillion. And we had 3 days, 72 hours, in which to understand what was in it and vote on it. And we had a deadline. And I said, I can't, in good conscience, vote for this because I don't even know what's in it. I literally don't know. Of course, there were a lot of good things. It's a massive spending bill. But what were the bad things? So I've committed to work with both members on both sides of the aisle to fix that kind of process, which I believe is broken. And that might be a sense of what you're talking about, frustration at the, you know, doing all the work at the deadline. And I don't think that that process is worthy of the country we serve or the citizens we represent.
All right, let's move back to the issue of the Arctic, and we're going to go to Mark in Palmer, who wants to make some comments about climate change, and then we'll move on to some issues about transiting the Bering Strait, which I'm interested in talking about. Hi, Mark.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. Yeah, you started out talking about the military, and the military has clearly accepted climate change as a serious threat to national security. And I believe it's like the largest issue facing Alaskans, all Alaskans. And I just have to say I'm disappointed that both of our U.S. senators are very slow to accept the settled science that clearly shows the human role in climate change. So I just want to make the comment that the science is settled. There's clearly a human role. We need to do something about it, and we need to do something about it sooner rather than later. And that's just a comment I'll make. Thank you.
All right, Mark, thank you for the call. And we're going to take one more call on the issue of climate change from Peggy and Soldatna, and then I'll let Senator Sullivan and Mr. Fleener respond to these comments. Hi, Peggy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I also am very concerned about climate change. I was born in Anchorage 70 years ago in the middle of a snowstorm, and today I'm looking out my window at green grass in Soldotna, which has had, this is our third year of having rain in winter, which never, ever used to happen. So I don't skip the science pages, articles in the newspaper, and I can see with my own eyes that we have radically changed the gaseous atmosphere, and we are warming the planet, which brings with it questions about the military and the Arctic now that it can be traversed, et cetera. My question for the senator is regarding the president's proposal to begin reducing our coal-fired power plants, which are the single biggest producer of greenhouse gases at the moment. And how can he justify his vote against that? How does he explain that to his children and his grandchildren?
Senator Sullivan, would you like to respond?
Sure. Well, listen, I'll try and wrap in Mark's comments as well. You know, I agree that the climate certainly is changing in Alaska, and Peggy's comments point to that, and there's no doubt that that's happening. I would respectfully disagree with Mark. With 7 billion plus people on the planet, human activity is likely to be impacting climate, but to the extent to which it is the principal driver on that, I think the jury is still out. So we can respectfully disagree on that. I also respectfully want to disagree when you hear the term, and it's used a lot, that the science is settled. I've talked to a lot of scientists. Most scientists say the science is never settled. As a matter of fact, one of the scientific principles is that the science is never settled. We are always learning about new things, whether it's climate, whether it's technology. So the notion that's out there that the science is settled, I believe, actually goes against basic scientific principles. With regard to Peggy's question on coal-fired plants, I'm going to go back to the issue of the Constitution. The president, through the EPA, has been issuing regulation after regulation. And in the last two Supreme Court terms, the Supreme Court of the United States has declared rules issued by the EPA as not lawful, not abiding by the statute, not abiding by the Constitution. And this likely newest rule, which again is going to be challenged by many, many states, likely has the same problem. What the president needs to do is not say, hey, if the Congress won't act, I'm just going to do it. That's not the way the Constitution of the United States works. What he needs to do is come to the Congress, come to members of both parties and say, here's my concern. Here's what we want to do. We want to work with you, Congress, to get these things through. And they don't do that. So, you know, I'm concerned that we are starting to shred the Constitution to move forward on an agenda that right now, at least with regard to Congress, doesn't have the support of the American people. And let me just make one final comment on this. The EPA administrator recently, a few months ago, before one of the big Supreme Court cases, EPA versus Michigan, was going to be ruled on, she was asked if she thought they were going to win the case. She said yes, which was fine. Her lawyers worked hard on it. They didn't win. But what she ended up saying after she said yes was, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter because we've already issued a rule several years ago that the American people and businesses have to comply with. Well, that to me is the height of arrogance that you can say, essentially, even if we lose in court, we still win because we're going to require people to do something that has no legal basis. So back to Peggy's comment, whatever we do in terms of policy has to abide by the Constitution. And right now we have federal agencies. It's not just me saying it. It's the highest court in the land saying that that's not happening.
Let's get the word settled out of the scientific question. There's always going to be some debate, but the majority of climate scientists, as you know, NASA scientists, National Academies of Science, DOD reports, the climate is warming twice as fast in the Arctic as anywhere else. At what point would you feel convinced that the science is fairly solid on what's happening and why it's happening? What would you need to see?
Well, look, I think I'm going to continue to study the reports that come out, and I do that. But the other thing from my perspective is what makes the most sense in terms of how we try to address this. So I'm certainly somebody who favors an all-of-the-above strategy, a true all-of-the-above strategy with regard to our energy mix. And it's actually very interesting because most Alaskans know we actually have a really good record in terms of that. You know, a lot of people in the lower 48 just equate Alaska with oil and gas. But as most Alaskans know, down in the southeast, you know, we have entire communities that are powered by hydro, that are powered by wind. So I think that's an important way to move forward. But one of the things that I think is critical is to make sure that whatever we do in terms of addressing climate change, that we make sure that we continue to emphasize human invention, economic growth, and these are the key to advancing the science with regard to solutions. And one of my concerns about, again, what Peggy mentions, an EPA rule, you have EPA rules that actually have more government control over the economy. That's not the way to have a strong economy, entrepreneurial spirit, invention, that in my view is going to be the most important thing we can do with regard to addressing some of these issues. Like, for example, battery storage and other things like that that are so critical to renewables.
All right. We are going to take one more quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on Arctic issues as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience. Through their engaging staff and faculty, APU's education is designed to broaden and deepen their students' potential through action and understanding. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by APU.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're discussing a wide range of issues today with Senator Dan Sullivan and Arctic Policy Advisor for Governor Walker, Craig Fleener. Mr. Fleener, your thoughts about the change that we're seeing in the climate and what you think the appropriate response should be. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think the idea that the climate is changing is, maybe we shouldn't use the word settled, but very clearly things are different than they were before, and tomorrow they're going to be different again. I think it's probably better for us as a society to look at how we can adapt to the changes around us. And I've tried to use the term adaptation in a way that brings us together to look at the solutions to the problems we're facing. So if we have communities slipping into the ocean because of the loss of permafrost, we need to work on finding solutions to that. Instead of really beating each other up so much about the science, whether it's man-caused, how much of an impact man is having or not having, you know, here in Alaska, we're not going to be able to solve that problem. We need to work together to solve the local Alaska problems, which means, back to what I was talking about earlier, we need to focus on infrastructure. We need to look at where communities are placed, why they're placed there, and work with directly with those communities if they want to move or if they need infrastructure improvements. We just have to work together, and we do have to find a way to do a better job of harnessing energy in Alaska. I think actually one of the greatest problems that Alaska faces is the extremely high cost of energy. Now, it isn't as high as it was 2 years ago, of course, because of the drop in price of oil. But that's controlled, again, by global markets. Mm-hmm. We need to find ways to get better, do better, and be better. And I think that has to be an all-inclusive answer. We have to take a look at all of our resources. Now, nobody will ever want to hear you or me or anybody else say we should look at coal as an answer, but maybe we should. You know, we have 800 years of coal in the ground. 800 years is an awful lot of energy. If we're going to solve some of our problems, we've got to look at renewables, but we also have to look at ways of improving renewables. Renewables are not that great for Alaska right now because they're extremely expensive, and most communities that have a solar panel or a windmill were able to get it because somebody else paid for it. If we're really going to be self-sustaining like we want to be in Alaska, we've got to find a way to drive those costs down. And one of the ways we can do that is through innovation. I think an area for government, I'm a small government guy. I don't like the idea of big government doing much in the first place. But one area I think they can contribute is by putting dollars towards research. We should be looking at, as the senator said, finding ways to improve batteries. The last thing you want to do is send 20,000 pounds of batteries to every village in Alaska. Then what are you going to do with them? So we've got to find ways to improve all aspects of renewables. At the same time, we should be putting money towards researching coal. How can we make it better? What can we do to coal to make it more efficient, cleaner, better, because it's an abundant resource, instead of just sweeping it off the table as the president and others want to do, because it is dirty and it is highly sulfuric and et cetera. instead of sweeping it off the table, we ought to take a look at ways of improving it. We've improved the automobile. We've improved the locomotive. We've improved airplane engines. We can improve coal. And I think instead of just sweeping it off the table, we need to take a full spectrum look at everything. One of the biggest problems Alaska has is the extremely high cost of energy, especially in rural Alaska. We've got to focus on driving that down.
Well, in our final couple of moments, as we both know, the federal government is having budget issues, so is the state of Alaska. From both of you, what do you think can happen to address some of the needs that have been identified in the next few years? What has to happen? Senator Sullivan, a comment from you about budgetary issues for
Alaska. Well, you know, Lori, what's going on in Alaska with regard to the leaders of the state addressing our significant fiscal challenges, I think in some ways is a model of what we should be doing in Washington, but we're not. Like I said, this budget deal that just went forward, it's likely going to run up our national debt to probably within the next year or two to $20 trillion. Think about that, $20 trillion. Now, you know, Peggy mentioned our kids and grandkids. I have kids, teenage daughters, and I think about that $20 trillion debt, and I just think, what in the world are we doing to our kids and our grandkids, saddling them with that debt that they had nothing to do with? To me, one of the key things we have to do a better job at, both in Alaska, but certainly nationally, and really the only answer is to grow our economy. We have the U.S. economy for almost the entire history of our country has grown close to 4% GDP growth. That's what's made us strong. It's what's given us a great economy, a strong middle class, a strong national defense, great universities, opportunity. In the last 7 years, we haven't even broken 2% GDP growth. This is a huge problem that not enough members of Congress, Democrats, Republicans, talk about. We have to get back to traditional levels of American growth that helps us with these huge fiscal challenges.
Final word in about 20 seconds.
I think it's very true. We do have to focus on economic opportunities. We've got to export more. We have to produce more locally. And I'm talking about for Alaska as well. And we have to reduce the expenditures of government. We cannot continue to grow government and drive down the GDP.
All right. Thank you to my guests, Senator Dan Sullivan and policy Arctic Policy Advisor Craig Fleener.
Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
If you're a rural Alaska resident with an interest in preserving subsistence hunting, trapping, and fishing for future generations, and maintaining an open forum for public expressions, opinions, and concerns regarding subsistence, consider applying for a seat on the Federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council by Friday, January 29th, 2016. More information at 1-800-478-1456 or email subsistence@fws.gov. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.